You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Na, 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 na.
Hi, Hannies. It's Amir Yasai, and you're back for season two of The Take On. Hi, y'all. Welcome back to The Take On. It's Amir Yas. I'm at the tail end of my staycation in LA, and I'm just loving it. Sushi, ridiculously attractive people. It could be worse. I'm going to be on Dr. Phil next month talking about cancel culture, so keep in touch for that. Just a lot of crazy things going on. I'm pitching, as you know, my scripted project, so it's been a lot of imposter syndrome that I'm working through. But, you know, speaking of working through stuff and just rising above. Ebony K. Williams, my new friend, she's just so supportive, so wonderful. If you've seen her, you know, for her freshman season on Roni, it seems like she's been on the show for years. So it doesn't even feel like a freshman season, but I just have to welcome her to The Take On. How are you, Ebony?
Hi, my darling Amir. It's been a day, and my dog here, James, just knocked over mommy's cell phone. Thank you.
We love your dog. It's fine.
I'm great and happy to talk to you, and also happy that we're recording this on a Friday because I need mama needs a drink.
Mama deserves a drink. I know this is cringe because people do this to me, but I need to like go through your resume because I'm just so in awe. And so obviously the late night talk show, State of the Culture on Revolt TV, and then, you know, holding court, like when Luann was doing you, I was just like living for all of that.
I mean,
we need a new word because I feel like Black excellence and Black girl magic doesn't do you justice. We need one more, like, another level to it because you're just amazing. And the fact that you've dealt with Fox News, I mean, me being Persian, Muslim, and queer, I know what happens at Fox News. So the fact that you kind of powered through and again, created space and took up space, which I think is really powerful because a lot of people think that when you do that, especially me being a queer person in Hollywood, people think the space is created for me. I created the table and I invited these white executives to my table. Right. And I feel like you've done that in so many ways. So my first question, and I got this DM a lot from a lot of women, especially in queer people, imposter syndrome, right? Like right. Michelle Obama deals with it. I'm sure you've dealt with it. How do you navigate that?
I actually don't deal with it, Amir.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. It's not because I'm superhuman or have some inflated sense of myself. It is because I understand the true nature of systems in our society, right? So when you really sit with the reality of systems in our society that are not necessarily faults of anybody present today, these systems pre-exist all of us, right? And they're systems that work to subordinate some and empower and advance others. And because I know how these systems work, Amir, and I've seen them in real time my entire life, what I know for sure is this fact. When you see a person of color, when you see a person of queer identity, when you see a person of religious minority, when you see a person who occupies any identity other than that of white, dominant, heteronormal society in a position of any kind of power, privilege, or influence, no, they are overqualified to be there. Period. End of story.
Well said.
So, yeah, try it sometimes. If you go into a courtroom and see a Black woman on the bench deciding and being the authority in the courtroom, go into a bank and see a queer person, someone of trans identity, whatever it is, whatever that thing is, that's not the consistent dominant caste in society occupying that space, they have overqualified to be there because everything in our society says they should never be there in the first place. So if they are indeed there, so if you are listening to this and you occupy any of those identities and you find yourself in a space, don't question it for a second. You are, it's actually the opposite, Amir. You have overqualified. You have had to overperform in every classroom, test, boardroom, interview to defy things like implicit bias and overtly racist or homophobic points of entry, barriers of entry, whether they be standardized tests or what, you know what I mean? We could be here all day.
Right.
Just know
totally.
That when you see someone outside of those identities occupying space, it's never that they're underqualified and should therefore be in any kind of imposter posture. They are inherently overqualified to be there because everything has worked against them taking up that space.
Listen, I rarely get chills. I've worked in this town for 20 years and what you said really resonated with me because it's absolutely true. Like, I'm one of the only publicists you'll meet that has an MBA and all these masters and all of these experiences. And it's almost like I have to keep proving myself. Like, I've been in rooms where I'm pitching my project to like Apple TV and they're like, can you get us coffee? And I'm like, excuse me.
Excuse you.
Like that kind of minimizing. And I've had to remind myself that I deserve to be here. Like,
yeah,
you've
had to overperform to even get to the space.
Exactly.
And listen, for me, this is not new to Housewives or new to being even on television. This, for me, started, you know, when I was 23 years old practicing law in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I go into a courtroom. The presumption is either you're a defendant, which, you know, fine. As everyone now knows, you know, I did have my day of Stuart Weitzman. Sticky fingers, that did happen.
Whoops, I've been there too, honey. It's fine.
Honey, and one other thing I'm really proud of, and that is, A, I learned an incredible lesson and was able to use deferred prosecution to help clients throughout my actual legal career. And B, I mean, I've literally always had exceptional taste in footwear. So,
oh, there you go. All. You're always making lemonade out of lemons. I mean, listen. That.
No, yeah, but back to when I started practicing at 23, you know, this little brown girl who, you know, was even younger looking than I actually was at the time. You know, maybe I'm the court reporter, maybe I'm the paralegal, but no one ever thought I was the attorney. You know, not even my clients half the time could believe that I was, you know, their counsel when I was working as a public defender. You know, I show up in the jail, they're like, you got to be kidding me. This is like Doogie Howser's my lawyer. But then, and then I opened my mouth and then I'm impeccable in my oral argument, I'm impeccable in my ability to advocate for my client and be extremely professional with my adversary, co-counsel. It just all works. So the expectation, Amir, is always in favor of us because the expectation undermines our credibility and then we overperform and it's a great thing.
Interesting. It's funny. I had a friend, one of my co-hosts, he was, you know, white and gay and older than me. And we were pitching a project similar to kind of Queer Eye. And it was funny because he was like, listen, we are here and you've already proven that you deserve to be here. And it's funny, we go into these meetings and they think I was his assistant, even though I was the one that came up with the idea. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny the way he would operate because of his white privilege. He would just be like, no. And so I started channeling that. And when people would do microaggressions, I would just do it right back. I'd be like, they'd be like, oh, get a coffee. And I'm like, I'd love my coffee with some sugar. And they'd be like, I'm the executive at Apple TV. And I'm like, and I'm the one pitching you. So I think we're even, right?
I think
like,
we're even. Yeah. Actually, my best friend from law school, who's this beautiful white woman named Tori, who's out in LA. So if you see a gorgeous blonde running across the beach in Malibu, say, hey, Tori.
I will.
She started this telling me this back when we were in law school. She's like, Ebony, because we were like boss. We were, on the national moot court team. We were just killing it, you know, crushing all these, you know, male egos. Excuse me. And Tori said, Ebony, you've got to move with the confidence and tenacity of a mediocre white man.
I always say that. It's out of my own mouth. I love
literally.
That.
And this is from a white woman, you know, and she was absolutely right. And we've been rolling like that ever since.
I love it. I mean, I've met so many, I've worked for clients. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but you know, they're very mediocre white and still are working and they never questioned the opportunity. They never once, I would question that they got the opportunity, but they would never question that they deserved everything they got. And
no,
I really every day channel that.
Systems set up to say that there is an inherent value of white maleness and white heteronorm, right? So anything that pushes back on that, that actually feels like the injury to them.
Interesting. I've heard that before. I've heard that before from, you know, straight white men. And, you know, we'll have another show about Kevin James, but me, when I'm pitching a show about a queer Muslim, if there's one more movie about that, they're like, oh, we've had enough. That's enough queer Muslims on TV. That's enough. We're good. So it's a real battle. And I feel like I have to keep fighting it. And the word that really triggers me, and I wanted to talk to you about this, and I've heard this from a lot of people, is the word microaggression. Because to me, it feels very macro and it feels very aggressive. So that word, like, can you break that down for us and like what it?
I mean, I'm with you, Amir. Like, I don't, you know, I use the word only because it's kind of recognizable in a 2021 trying to get their race conscious society. But I don't like it. And, you know, a lot of times I'll say the split. So I'll say micro slash macro aggression. Or I'll just say an ignorant racial aggression, because that's really, to me, a more accurate definition of it. You know, when someone says, you know, has anyone ever told you you're articulate? And the thinking is, let me think about it. Was it any time during my undergraduate career at one of the esteemed public universities in the nation? Was it during my law school career? Was it when I practiced law for over 8 years? Was it when I published a book? Oh, no, maybe it was during my national broadcast career in journalism. And that's not a brag. That's not a flex. It's just to say that. Look at who I am, look at what I've done, and then you tell me if I am to be complimented by your basic acknowledgement of a skill set I've been classically trained in.
Wow. Well said.
That's aggressive. You know,
and it's very aggressive. I've heard this all the time. I used to play tennis almost pro, and people would always say things like, wow, you're really good for a Middle Eastern person, for a gay person. I've never seen an athlete that's so committed that's gay. I'm like, why are you bringing that up? Like, I had this, it was funny. This is just a couple of weeks ago. I was on a Zoom call pitching, and one of the executives said, wow, you know, I saw your TikToks and I thought you were going to be so dramatic. I'm like, that's a persona. Like, I'm in a professional meeting. Did you think I was going to come in and go, let's twerk and cut. Like, I'm going to be a caricature of a gay man. Like, I was very taken aback by that.
Well, let's talk about that, Amir, because I was just having this conversation with someone the other day about representations of Black womanhood in my case, in your case, you know, a queer man of color. People really love the spectacle of it all, right?
They do.
And I say people, and it can be inclusive of people that also look like us, right?
Sure.
That get really deeply married to a comfortability of us taking up space, but only on the condition that it is for entertainment purposes, that it is with an element of spectacle that allows them to laugh at you versus laughing with you. And is this deep kind of, you know, analysis that drove Dave Chappelle to step away from his own gazillion-dollar empire at its peak?
Yes, it did.
Because he realized, oh, the horn, these fuckers aren't laughing with me. They're laughing at me. They have decided to make, and Dave Chappelle, for those that don't know, highly intelligent man, comes from a legacy of educators. His father was, I want to say, dean of a college university. Dave Chappelle is an elite thinker. And his comedy was for the sake of pushing cultural thought. But when he realized that it wasn't being appreciated for that, Amir, and it was instead being stripped down and reduced to caricaturizations of Blackness in America, he said, fuck that. And he went to Africa.
Yes, he did. And he walked away from millions,
like hundreds of millions. $1 million. And he is just now coming back on his own terms, making sure that never again will he be reduced to other people's necessity to reduce him as a Black man in the space. And I have the utmost respect for Chappelle for doing that.
Wow. As someone who's done a lot of comedy and been in these comedy clubs, a lot of racism, a lot of homophobia. That's kind of still the bread and butter. And even in a city as progressive as LA. So for him to find his way, and also comedians, to be funny, you have to be smart, because you have to understand how to put stuff together. And, you know, I was in the closet doing stand-up, and you have to really be able to kind of put your emotional stuff on the side and then make fun of something that is quite traumatic. So it requires a lot. And for a lot of people who don't know, like, I'm happy you mentioned that, because people associate comedy with just jokes, but a lot of comedians are very educated. A lot of actors are very educated. A lot of performers are very educated. So it requires a lot to, especially like to just put of yourself into something, it requires a lot. So
yeah. And guess what? Not now, because it's always been the case, but now we're seeing, I think, an amplification, Amir, of housewives being highly educated, high achieving women. Dr. Tiffany Moon, Dr. Wendy Yosefo, myself, Garcelle, Crystal, you know, you're seeing, an integration of achievement model in the new era housewife. And that's no shade, not to say that there haven't been highly educated women on Housewives for years, but you see the network leaning into that model of casting. And it just so happens, going back to how we started this wonderful dialogue, the overqualification required, right, to be the first woman of color on a white, exclusively white cast.
And the word that came up the minute I heard you were cast is the whole word monolith, right? I get monolithed a lot because it's like people will meet me and they're like, wait a second, I didn't expect you to be this feminine. I want you to be more masculine. I want you to be more what I thought a gay man is. Why aren't you buff? Whatever. So this word monolith, and I was trying to explain this to my friend who's like a straight white man. He was like, I don't get it. But can you, that word, it's like, and unfortunately, anyone that's coming in, a woman of color, into these casts, it's like people are saying, like I saw on Twitter, people were like, Vershawn and Ebony are so different. Well, what did you think they were going to be? They were going to be exactly the same? Like, I don't understand that whole idea of the monolith.
And I love that Vershawn and I were so different because it interrupts that notion of a monolith. Like one of the things we say a lot in you know, the culture and as Black women in media, we are not a monolith, right? We are not a monolith. There's not a singular way to be a Black woman, a gay man, a Persian person, a Jewish person, you know, or whatever, right? Or even a white woman. And thank God for that, right? Like, I think that's what people don't kind of make space for, is the same way that there can be a Heather Dubrow, right? And a Tamra Judge and a Gretchen all on the same cast, which to me occupy three extremely different buckets of white, you know, womanhood. There can be that same diversity amongst Chinese women. Because even Tiffany and Crystal, who I have relationships with, both of them, yes, they're both Chinese women, they're both educated, they're both other, they're night and day.
Totally different.
Woo, baby, you know. And that's the beauty of it. So it's challenging, right? Again, in a society that normalizes tokenism and there can only be one. And, you know, we have an expectation of what that one is like aesthetically and, you know, personality and energy wise, to shatter those implicit bias points and say, this interrupts my idea of what a Black woman was. And I think for me, that is one thing I loved about my season. And, you know, people can, you know, feel all kinds of ways about it. And I've heard feedback of all points of view. Like some people absolutely loved, you know, that I came on New York and really, you know, didn't kind of occupy those traditional freshman year housewife buckets, you know, like I'm not going to be Hayes. I'm not taking any shit. I'm not with the shits, you know, like let's go from day one. And I just feel it's so important to be able to represent a Black woman on a reality show that's not necessarily in the mess. And listen, I love a messy housewife as much as anybody.
Sure,
I really do. I love a comedic leading housewife as much as anybody. I love, you know, I love all of those traditional lenses in which we think of a housewife. Like that's what happened. But why can't a housewife also be this and that?
You were both. You were very funny, but you were very eloquent. I mean, I had this woman message me and say this long paragraph. I used to follow you because it was fun, and now you're so negative because you're talking about Palestine, you're talking about Haiti, you're just so negative. And I'm like, this is the real world, honey. So welcome. The rest of us can't change the channel. I was talking, it's funny, I did on Clubhouse, I would do this room called White Privilege Makes Me Uncomfy. And the reason I use that word uncomfy, it's very childish, because I was talking to my cousin's husband and he was like, I really sympathize, but I'm a straight white man and I benefit from my privilege. And I was like, I get it. I love that. I love that you're owning that you can change the channel. I love that you're owning. But I, as someone who is a person of color, who is fat, being fat in America is not easy. Every day I'm fat shamed for my body by gay men, by women, by my family, by what. Aside from that, so many different intersections, I don't have the privilege to change the channel. I have to watch in horror sometimes.
That's that scene, you know, when I'm at Ramona's and she's like, can we not talk about race, color, or creed? And I was like, show me the coat closet so I can just hang up my Blackness tonight, just tonight.
Yes.
And then when I get the fuck out of here, I'll put it back on. Does that work? You know what I mean? And it was me being, you know, sarcastic and saying it in jest, but trying to express to my castmate that I don't have that option. Like, mm-hmm. this is a part of my lived experience. And if we are, if the mandate, right, is for you to be in a relationship with me as a castmate, as a friend, as whatever we want to call it, right? If the mandate is divorcing myself from an integral part of my identity for your comfort, I have to reject that mandate.
Mm.
I just have to. It's an unacceptable proposition for me.
And you did it so eloquently. Like, you didn't get into that trope of like the trope, unfortunately, on a lot of Black women. I'm friends with a lot of Black women, is the angry Black woman, right? Like that trope that people always want to, oh, don't act out. Like, you know, with Luann, it was like, don't act out. Why are you yelling? And it's like, wait a second, Leah just had a meltdown and walked away from the table. I love that you acknowledge that. And instead of like pretending there isn't that white elephant in the room, you acknowledged it, which I thought is really eloquent. Was that intentional, or was that just in the moment you just were like, okay, I need to acknowledge that?
It was in the moment. It was okay. Such a coincidence that, yeah. you know, unfortunately, Leah had just demonstrated the exact double standard, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. unknowingly, you know, Leah's behavior was the perfect example of when you would identify someone's anger or upsetness. She literally right. stood up, called y'all all hoes, and stormed off. Which is totally yes, she did. Right?
Yeah.
He does that. Ramona also subsequently stands up, slams her hands on the table. I don't want to talk about dicks and pussies and blah, 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 blah. Got it. Okay, cool. 2 seconds later, I simply have the audacity to say an objectable fact, which is that this shape, because really this was all me in defense of Leah McSweeney. People forget because right. it got caught up into the angry Black woman trope and all that. People forget mm-hmm. this started off with me taking a position of advocacy for my fellow woman and castmate, Leah, because yes, I thought she was being shamed around respectability politics as it mm-hmm. related to her sexual freedom.
You know, especially when all these women have been very open. A lot of them have slept with the same man.
They're all hoes, Amir. Yeah. I mean, they are. Leah was right about that. So
nothing wrong with a hoe. It's just it's like Lisa Rinna, own it.
Own it, says Amber Rose. So no yeah. one's shaming hoism.
Right.
I'm simply saying that for Luann and Ramona to sit there in the height of hypocrisy, acting as if they're so above the language, and then Luann makes the point that she's above the language because she says it's about education. And then mm-hmm. I have to say, no. It cannot be about education, because if we're talking about formal education, no one has more at this table than I do, which is a truth.
That's a fact. That's not an opinion. It's a fact.
Yeah. Okay. And then it became, why are you angry? How dare you say I'm not educated? How dare you say you're smart? Nobody said any of that stuff, Luann. And then it escalated from there. But I just want to bring people back to what the actual issue was. Mm-hmm. It was me advocating on behalf of Leah and all women's right, actually, to express themselves in pure sexual freedom.
Which I love that about you. I love that you know, can be so, but that's what I think that it's important that people understand. Women, men, gay people, trans, it's a lot of intersection. You can be like very professional, but then talk about sucking dick. I mean, that's like being a human being. I don't know why people like put to us say in boxes. Dick.
Yeah, like, well, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah, and same with, if, you know, my favorite word is motherfucker. Why not? You know, like, yeah, you know, why not? And this goes back to the monolith, right? Like, yes. even beyond race, like we say, educated people can't speak a certain way, or, you know, women with a moral compass can dress a certain way, or men who are homosexual have to dress a certain. It's ridiculous. Right. Like, are we right. not all, was that not the whole point of feminism? Is choice? Is that not
That's
the whole point of the gay rights movement? Choice?
That's what I thought. And I, you know, it's so funny. People will message me, oh, now all gay men want to wear dresses. No, that's just my account.
Right.
There's a lot of gay men who, like my ex was very masculine. That's just who he was. Again, yeah. it's just about choice. It's about expression. And I think that people kind of get lost in the sauce. And they, you know, I've had people say, well, now you want me to learn all these pronouns and you want me to be so eloquent and not say Oriental instead of Asian. Well, you can do all those things, but you're an asshole. Go ahead. Be an asshole. That's fine.
Yeah.
No one said,
and I mean, here's the end of it, Amir. People that want to sit in willful ignorance and they show up towards you with hostility for, mm-hmm. you know, correcting points on that. They're very fucking mad at me. Trust me. I get the DMs. So it's a mix of like 50% absolutely despise me for having the audacity to push our society forward as it relates to race consciousness and challenging right. views that, you know, are outdated and dangerous flat out. And then there's 50% of people that are obsessively in love with the fact that I am moving the needle just a little bit, right? Even on a platform like Housewives, they could seem insignificant to some and seem not important to some, but look at how important it is that Garcelle Bouvet hosts this beautiful and incredible night celebrating the culture of Haiti just a few episodes ago on Beverly Hills. Now we see see why that's important, because the Haitian people are experiencing a humanitarian crisis right here on the Texas border in the United States of America.
Yes, so they are.
Doing, yes, her humanizing of her people and her culture matters.
It absolutely does. And I think what people don't understand, and even with this happened with Tiffany as well, with the chicken fee, and then, you know, the way that Lisa Rinna was reacting to the food, people don't understand that with people of color, like Persian people, if I have a dinner and you react negatively to my food, that's okay. But it does affect me, because American people don't understand. They don't have connections to their food. Their food is from Germany, hamburgers, pizza from Italy. They don't have their own. We identify with our food that our people made, like when she was talking about the pumpkin, and that was so illuminating, because there's a lot of stuff in Iran as well with like the saffron that was not available to us when we were slaves.
That part of me right there. Like, there's a great Netflix doc, I'm sure you've seen it, High on the Hog, that talks about this in detail, right? It's the fact that for many people of color, or just various cultures, because I can't say that there's not European cultures that aren't, you know, have connections to food. But for many cultures, right? This notion of the challah bread is a perfect example, right? Of Ashkenazi Jews or Jews, period, right? This notion of our food and what our people and our ancestors have created, beautiful food and cuisine through struggle. Amen. Through oppression, through resistance. And that's why it is so celebrated in real time. You know, so anyways, I could be wrong. That's what it is. It's you've got a segment of America that I think, and I pray to God every night, that the segment of America that I'm about to describe is larger than the other segment. You've got a segment of America that absolutely includes a significant amount of white people, thank God, that are looking forward to the day where we truly can live Dr. King's dream of an omni. I heard this word recently, an omni of cultural Americans. So this is not saying that we're requiring you to be American and to be deemed a patriot to divorce yourself from your culture and your identity and assimilate to a white normative. Right. It's saying we repudiate that. We're more advanced than that. It's 2021, almost 2022. We are now so evolved and confident as an American national society that we can create space for Americanism, patriotism, to encompass the omni of it all. You know, our Jewish brothers and sisters, our Palestinian brothers and sisters, our Muslims, our gays, our trans, our queers, our bis, our pan, our black, our white, our Hispanic, our indigenous, our Asian, all of them. And none of us will be threatened by the other. That's my like fantasy of our nation.
I love that.
And I think more people are bought into that than not. But there is still a part of our nation that is holding on for dear life.
Florida.
Willful ignorance that allows them to say, if I never know better, I'll never have to do better. And how dare you challenge me to know better? Because if you challenge me to know better and you insist upon educating me, whether I want it or not, and I choose to do nothing about it, now I'm telling exactly who I am at my core.
Wow.
Because that's really what we're talking about. I mean, if we want to really be clear here, this is a segment of the American populace. By the way, it is inclusive of white people and people of color, because I've seen it. I can't tell you how many people of color are upholders of white supremacy. Put a pin in that.
Oh, yeah. That's the real thing.
They're saying my very identity is tied to upholding the status quo that I know, because I know my place in it and I know how to navigate it. And by you challenging me and challenging our society to evolve, grow, and move differently, this is those people that are fighting mad because we want them to use pronouns or understand language better. Somebody checked me the other day on my podcast, my dear brother, David Johns, who I love and adore. I'm always talking about men and women. He said, I love you. And I know you love everybody. Try men, women, and non-binary identifiers.
I love
Just try it.
Yeah.
It's great. I love growing. I love learning. I don't feel threatened by that. I feel that it makes me a better human and a better co-conspirator.
Of course it does. And listen, English is my second language, and I did a panel with 10 different pronouns. I'm telling you, if I can do it and you were born in America and English is your first language, you can do it as well. Like, let me tell you, it's you just, it's a choice. It's really an active choice. And I've had people say, well, I'm never going to sign off on your account. My account is for me. So if I want to wear makeup and a dress and a wig, if that really bothers you, block me.
Yeah,
that's fine.
It's fine.
I'm fine.
Yeah. People need to understand, people living their authentic truth is not a group project. And God bless the women of color, or alleged women of color, because I do think some of these are bot accounts and they're just making it up. But all these women of color that talk to me and send me DMs about how they would have done it had it been them as the first Black or brown housewife on New York. And to them, I say this.
But it wasn't you.
well, mazel and God bless you, truly. When you get the apple, when you qualify for the platform, God is my witness. I will support you wholeheartedly in how you choose to do it.
Exactly.
This season, the apple was in my hand. So I navigated the space as I saw fit and as how it felt good to my soul and my spirit. Because that, you know, ultimately, I am a woman of God. I am a woman of belief. And I am a woman of nothing happens by accident. And the fact that of all the Black women in New York City, I was the one that the network chose to occupy this particular season with this particular group of women, it wasn't by accident. So
I don't think it was. I don't think anything's by accident. And, you know, speaking of that, like, you know, obviously you're friends with Leah. Did you, like, going into this, because this is kind of like, I have a lot of friends that are on Bravo and all of them, it's kind of like no man's land. You really can't prepare. But did she give you any pointers? And, like, were you worried that it would affect your friendship? Because that's what I'm always worried about doing reality TV with friends is like.
Yeah, the reality is, you know, this is not really a secret anymore. I didn't know Leah before the show either.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Excuse me. No, I met Leah literally a handful of days before we filmed that Central Park scene.
Okay, got it.
You know, in the beginning. Yeah. So lucky for me, I didn't have to jeopardize like a long-term relationship in the sake of what happens when you throw a camera and millions of viewers into it. But, you know, Leah and I did have the most organic, like pre-existing, friends in common, you know, like you know, people in the industry, Charlamagne, Angela Yee, people like that, which made it easier and much quicker to be able to connect with her. So yeah, that's what I would say. So listen, she gave me, you know, some pointers, which I appreciated and still do, but it's what you said. Like someone can tell you about it all day until you are thrown into the deep end of the ocean and you've got to figure it out. It's just an experience that you cannot prepare for.
I mean, like I said, I've seen a lot of people do it and I did one episode of a dating show and the way they manipulated and twisted everything around. I mean, it was crazy. But yeah, it that's just reality TV. They manipulate. But I think the way that you handled it, and do you think the word preachy and what they kept putting on, because I've gotten that word myself. Is that just someone actually putting the mirror up to someone's BS and then they call you preachy? Because Sonia never called you preachy. She kind of received the assignment, I felt, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I saw front-facing as well from Sonia, but who knows? I mean, I also did see a couple scenes where, you know, when she got around Luann and Ramona, she, you know, kind of got into the echo chamber of it. But
this is why we need the reunion, people.
I know. But listen, this is what I think. I think that term preachy is, in and of itself, a gaslight. You know, I think it's a dog whistle. I think it is a euphemism for what you just described, Amir. You say preachy, but what you really mean is you are holding up a mirror to bad behavior and having the audacity to suggest corrective behavior, which requires intention to do better. And because nobody that consistently behaves badly wants to do better, we'll call it preachy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
like that's what it is. Like, you know, and I'm also, again, as a woman of faith, I'm like, since when did preachy become a bad thing? I mean, I don't subscribe. I don't think I was preaching. Like, well, that's ridiculous. Now, if you want to say I was teaching, sure. Absolutely.
I like teaching. I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You know, and I felt like your Harlem night, and then Leah had said, like, oh, it wasn't fun. But why does everything have to be fun?
Fun for who? Because that is fun for me. Like, Shabbat is fun for me. Like, I remember when I went to my first Shabbat dinner, which wasn't all that long ago, maybe 6-7 years ago. Right. I learned so – I love learning. See, this is where it goes back to, Amir. This is why that monolith concept is so fucked up. Right. There are women, and it's not just Black women. It's not just brown women. There are white women. I had a girl – speaking of L.A., I was in West L.A., staying at a beautiful little boutique hotel, minding my business by the pool. And on the third day – she just had to say something to me. She had a New York Yankees hat on. This was a white young woman, couldn't be more than 26, 27 years old. And she said, not to fuck up your vibe, Ebony, but I'm a fan of the show. I watch you on Housewives. I am a native New Yorker. And I would have given my left leg to have been at Harlem Night Dinner. That night looked so beautiful, elegant, fun. I would have loved to have learned about Baldwin. I would have loved to have learned about Josephine Baker. And sign me up next time you have one. Wow. So it's like we got to kind of deconstruct who's deciding what's fun and what's not. I want to know an answer to why, you know, when I put on a beautiful Afro wig, shout out to my stylist, T. Cooper, okay, and donned an Afro wig and embodied the first Black woman to be able to participate in a Miss America pageant, which wasn't until 1970 on the dot. And so this is how this came about. When Lou said we want to do a 1970s beauty pageant as the Halloween party, I thought, that's amazing. That's great. I'm a pageant girl. I love it. But my first question, seriously, Amir, was, could I have even competed with y'all in 1970?
Probably not.
And I had to look it up. And it was like, I want to say it was like 71, maybe 72. That was the first year of an integrated Miss America pageant, which happened before Miss USA got integrated. All right, cool. So I find this out. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm going to pay homage to this first Black woman who happened to be Miss Ohio, who competed in Miss America and, you know, put on my Afro wig. And I had the time of my life at that pageant and, you know, being campy and pissed that I got second runner up and I should have won. And I had fun. I had a laugh, right? Yeah. And then to see in confessional that Ramona Singer's like, oh, she can't even have fun and just be normal at the Halloween party. And I'm like, well, that's rich. So Luann gets to don an Afro wig and full on blackface at a Halloween party two seasons ago. And everybody thought that was hilarious. Only Carol even acknowledged the horror of it all. And Ramona thought that was fun. Luann got to have fun in an Afro. Why can't I have fun in an Afro?
It's the double standard of it all, right?
Right. So that's weird. Those are my questions. So I just want people, you know, and I know it's a lot of people that fall into this. She's preachy. She's not fun. She's too serious. And we don't want to just consider that this is fucking fun for me. I actually had the time of my life, you know,
and I could tell.
I really did, you know, and it might not be your brand of fun. It might not be Leah McSweeney's brand of fun, but it's certainly fun for me. And to the critique of like, read the room, I push back on the notion that the women that occupy the four walls that I'm in are the only room we're playing to. Because that wasn't the room I'm playing to. Like, least we forget, this is a TV show, y'all. There are millions of people all across the globe watching our interaction. So I was playing to the room, all right. I was playing to a global room, Amir, that advances my vision of an omni-shared humanitarian America.
I hear that. And I don't know why there's this idea that if you're a queer person on Bravo or a person of color, that when you have an agenda, it's somehow ridiculous. But then all the white cast members have their own agendas.
So exactly. I don't like,
why can't you have your, if that's your agenda, that's a pretty bold, I personally feel very respectable agenda.
My dear. Listen, the problem goes back to what we just said. Yeah, all these white women have agendas and as they should, because if you occupy a platform that's got this kind of impact and you don't have an agenda, you're a fool.
You're wasting your time.
Very clear. You're a full-on fool. So Bethany had an agenda. It was to promote Skinny Girl. And look how well that worked out for her. And nobody's demonizing her for that.
No, they're not.
Rena's got an agenda to promote Depends.
Yeah. If you were making look money off of this, then maybe people would all of a sudden be like, oh, this is fine to talk about race. But I don't know why.
Seriously,
like this,
you know, we having all these conversations come on the is really important. With some kind of intention. And just because my intention is not to make a full-on fool of myself or to lean into the caricature of it all and to maybe kind of challenge some of our ideas as to what we expect a Black woman to look and sound like on national TV, particularly in the reality show space, I think that's a noble agenda. And I'm proud to have it. And, you know, as long as I'm given the opportunity, I'll continue it.
I 100% echo that, and I agree, because you look like you were having fun. I mean, you took your top off with everyone. You danced. You partied. I mean, what else did they want?
I was going to say, Amir, listen, I don't know what the people want from me. Okay, I gave you community dick as a phrase. I ran around with an Afro wig and a bottle of tequila. I put my titties out with Swarovski crystals in a moment of freedom and expression.
And real titties, my
actual gravity affected titties. Yes.
That's very impactful. I'm telling you, like, people don't understand these things because they don't understand body dysmorphia. When you see someone with a real body and it's beautiful and it's like, it's not surgically enhanced. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. If you do that, I'm 100% for it. But just to see that is nice.
As somebody who's always struggled feeling confident around my breast size, because they've always been huge since I was like 13 or 14. And I've always felt objectified and this and get a breast lift and get, you know what? Like this is how God made me. And for right now, at least in my life, I'm cool with it. I just started to think they actually looked good. So I'm going to go with that. So it's like, yeah, I gave people that. I gave them, there are some really funny memes. I love the fan base and how creative they can be. I gave them all those moments. You guys got to meet my sweet baby, Kerry James, that my friend Natalie was hating on the entire season. I gave y'all, don't date the talent, date the owner. Like I got some gems.
You, of course you did. And you also gave us that emotional, you know, up and down of finding your sister and then it wasn't, and then finding a friend and then your dad. Like, I mean, there were so many layers that I feel like in some ways, like Melissa Gorga was kind of trying to have that and then kind of didn't follow through with it. But you really nailed it. You really had the ups and downs of finding your sister and all of that. So I don't know what people wanted from you, but listen, that Gucci puffer lives in all of our hearts.
Thank you.
We love the Gucci puffer. We love you.
That's Dapper Dan. You know, that's, and if you don't know who Dapper Dan is, look that shit up. That is a fashion icon, living legend.
Yes, he is. He's finally getting his due after Virgil Abloh really helped to kind of bring him into stuff a little more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it. Listen, all of those things aside, obviously we're not getting a reunion and I don't want to, we don't need to, there's 100 theories online. You can look up why people think they're not doing, what I don't care about that. What I care about is, if you can tell us where you are. Personally, I love Sonia. So I really want to know where you're at with Sonia and Leah. And if you want to tell us anyone else, but how are, like, friendship wise?
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a great place with Sonia. You know, I will say it's true what they say about Sonia in that when the cameras go down, you know, Sonia gets MIA. I don't personally take that personal. Like, you know, maybe it's because she's a newer friend, but I also, Sonia and I are both introverts. Right. With introverted people, we just don't need to talk to you every day like that. You know, I cannot talk to somebody. I've got LA friends. I used to live out in LA for like 5 years, from 2010 to 2014 and a half. They're friends from LA, Amir, that I haven't talked to all year long.
But you don't have to. That's real friendship. You don't
have to. And then when I pick up the phone and call you and say, let's pull up to Beauty in Essex, it's a vibe.
Oh, I love Beauty in Essex. I love that. Right? I was there yesterday.
You know, exactly. So Sonia's that kind of friend, you know, like you don't have to talk to her every day. You don't have to check in. You don't have to be up in her business. She's definitely not going to be up in yours. But if she has a thought, she'll pick up the phone and call me. You know, that was real, that conversation where she was seeking some level of business and legal support around her business. So, you know, I shared, you know, legal counsel with her. So we have those conversations. And then she'll also just call me drunk from a winery with her sister and, you know, we'll chop it up. So we're good. You know, Leah and I talk the most frequently, and it's about a litany of different things. It's, you know, how she's doing, where she's at with dating or not, how Kier's doing in her new private school, and also Haiti or whatever's going on socially. And that's not always us seeing everything exactly the same. You know, Leah is one of the few people on this cast that I can have a sound, rational debate of point of view and know it's not going to sabotage the friendship or the relationship.
Absolutely, which I think is amazing. I wanted to just have a couple fan questions. I could talk to you forever, and you need to come to LA or I need to come to New York, and I just want to hug you. That's all I need is a hug from Ebony. And first of all, I do want to mention this. I really love that you did like a tour de France of like all the Bravo people. You saw Reza, which I know, and you saw Tiffany, which I know. And I was just kind of living vicariously through you. So I love
Yes. And Crystal and I've had like three or four occasions to connect.
Love Crystal.
Amazing. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah. I know Rob. I used to work as a publicist and I did an event.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. So I know Rob, I did an event with Ted Sarandos from Netflix and, you know, I gave Rob a gift bag and he was like, my wife Crystal is going to love it. And then I was like, wait, is this the same Crystal? And then it was, so it's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. So this question came up a lot and, you know, it's a really good question. So basically they're like, we love Roni, but everyone said you're a breath of fresh air. And this person said, do you think that you were handed somewhat of a little bit of a sinking boat, right? And then you had to kind of resuscitate it and then you got blamed for ratings. Do you think there was a little bit of that blame going around?
I don't know that I would call Roni a sinking ship.
Okay. This is their words, not mine.
No, I know. I was going to say, I understand where the viewer's coming from, but I never saw it that way. I can honestly say I wasn't like, mm-hmm. oh shit, you know, here's the last ditch effort. And trust me, back when I was in news, I have definitely been put on shows that are sinking ships. So I know what that right. feeling is. And, you know, we know this is getting canceled before it even goes on the air, which was the case. With
the I've so been there. And you're like, should I tell my mom that I'm doing this? It's going
to
get canceled.
I'm like, do I have to even like do it? I hate that I have to do this on TV for people to see because this is like a disaster. But anyway, no, I didn't think that about Roni, actually. Not at all. I thought it was a transition year. You know, I thought, you know, because when I realized that we were actually going to film, you know, pretty much in peak lockdown of New York City, which meant no big splashy fun trip. It meant no, you know, shooting in, you know, landmark New York restaurants where the, you know, people of New York become a sixth or seventh housewife, which is important. And can you imagine Sex in the City in, you know, Cleveland?
That's not the same.
No, I'm not shitting on Cleveland. I'm just saying, you know, right. New York was one of the women. It was one of the characters. You know, and that's how it is in Roni. And so to not have that stuff at our avail, to know that, again, unlike some other legendary housewives from Roni, I don't know these women. I didn't right. at all.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the cringe that people were seeing is actual normal cringe that happens when strong-minded, badass women who don't give a fuck and all kind of think we're the shit in our own right, and we are, come up against each other. You know, and no one's kowtowing this time. No one's eating the shit. No one's being hazed, you know? So that's, you know, you're seeing this kind of the force of wills, if you will, in real time.
Absolutely.
On national TV. And the difference is the reason why I think I was blamed for it chiefly. And in fairness, you know, I think there were some other cast members that also took some blame, but I do think the blame I got was primarily because I'm the newest. Right. And I get that, actually. I don't take that personally. I'm the one that the longtime Roni viewers and fans are in least relationship with. Meaning, for whatever you think of how she behaved this season, if you're in a 13-year-long relationship with Ramona Singer, that means something. If you're in a 13-year-long relationship with Luann De Lesseps, that means something.
Right.
Same with Sonia. Right. You know, so I think it was very easy for people to, you know, say this season is lacking, which I totally agree with, by the way, in one argument, it was lacking women. It was lacking New York City. It was lacking the freedom of movement to really film this show as it has been done for years.
Right. But also, what about Orange County, Ebony? Like they did it in the mid, they literally were recording in their homes and nobody complained that much. Like, you know, like,
well,
I don't know.
You know what? I think it's just people's memories because I actually am old enough to remember when Orange County was airing and people gave it pure shit. I remember.
Okay. People maybe like, I forgot.
Yeah. No, I don't.
That feels like a lifetime ago, right?
People were like, this sucks. This is boring. I don't want to see this at home, you know, footage. Mm-hmm. And it was terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying the show was terrible. I'm saying like people's like appetite for dealing. That's what those women were going through. And I don't know those women in Orange County at all. Although I do have a budding relationship with one of the new women, Noella.
But, oh, I like Noella. She's sweet.
Yeah, she's, you know, absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous too, to boot. But You know, Emily Simpson, I don't know her from a can of paint. That woman had COVID. Her husband had COVID. Looks like her husband almost died. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that's not entertaining to y'all, but what do you want her to do? Like that's the reality.
That's what she was going through.
Yeah. You know, so anyways, you know, that's what I think about that. I think that, you know, when it comes to new housewives that you don't have longstanding relationships with as viewers, which I totally understand and appreciate, it becomes very easy to scapegoat, you know, someone like me who is new, you know, new kid on the block, not with the shits, extremely different energy from traditional housewives of any color, let alone the black housewife. And so, you know, I took a lot of hits and, you know, I'm okay with that because I also got a lot of love, Amir. Like, you know, look at you. Like, I was in London for my birthday and people were walking up to me just, you know, with such love and admiration and adoration, and it's mutual. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad with this ride. You know,
I love it. And, you know, listen, we love a Virgo, and I know it was your birthday on September 9th. So happy belated. I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
So this person really is a huge Roni fan. So they're saying it. I mean, this question almost answers itself, but who's the biggest hypocrite on the show? And who do you think has to apologize the most? I'm like, it's like, I already know the answer, but I'm still gonna
ask. I don't know that we do. I actually think the biggest hypocrite might be Luann.
Unexpected. I thought it was going to be Ramona.
I think who apologizes the most is Ramona. But I think, you know, that's my observation after, you know, knowing them for as long as I've known them now, you know. Yeah, those would be my answers to that.
I love that. And would you ever do All-Stars? Would you ever do All-Stars? I know you're it was just one season for you, but would you ever do All-Stars? We want
you. I never say never about anything. I mean, if you had told me I was going to be a New York housewife 2 years ago, I would have laughed you off, you know, out of this world, you know, but here I am. And I would definitely do it again because I think it also has challenged me in my own womanhood and in my development and in my growth. And, you know, it had been I'm just a curious student, Amir. And like, this was a big social experiment for all of us involved. And I like social experiments. I like doing things differently. I like pushing myself beyond points of comfort. And I know that some people don't, right? And that's where, you know, for some people it's cringe because they cannot sit with the uncomfortability of something different.
But that's how you grow. I mean, I tell people
if
this
you
every
wanna
day.
Grow. But
if you want
to
grow.
I think this is a good point to kind of end it on.
Yes.
That's how you grow and that's how you change if those things are of interest to you, meaning growth and change. If you are someone who has been well served by a current status quo, then maybe your interest in growth and change isn't there.
That's a great place to end. I felt that in my soul that, you know, and I think that like moving forward, I've stopped. I don't think of it as a waste of breath, but there are people that to me are far gone. Like I used to be a lifeguard and if someone was, they would take you down with them if they were drowning. So you had to sometimes knock them out. So what I do now is I do the knockout, the kind of emotional knockout. I'm like, you can hate on me. You can want to slit my throat. You can want to see me die and say hashtag happy pride, but it only says everything about you. And then when I go to your profile, there's a quote from Jesus. There is a family of four that just says more about you. And sometimes Ebony, they will message me and say, I'm so sorry, I was having a bad day, and they'll delete that comment. So it's not my job to make you like me. It's not my job to ask for permission to take up space. I'm just doing it.
And you do it well, my love. And I encourage you to keep on doing it. I'm very serious because it's that. I mean, a lot of people, they don't want to listen. Why are you wasting your time? You think I'm having these conversations for the sake of Ramona Singer?
No.
Come on. Like, and that's not shade to Ramona. It's just, I am on the side of the road with fresh fruit. And if you are famished, I am offering you the fruit. And some of, you know, not just the castmates, a lot of people that watch our show are culturally famished and they might not even know, right?
Yes, they are.
So here's a truckload of fresh fruit for the taking that I'm gifting you for free. You're welcome. And if you choose not to take it and you choose to deprive yourself of this important spiritual nourishment of growth and opportunity and change, that's on you.
That's on
you. I'm still shining and thriving, honey. Haven't missed a beat. And I won't.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And you're bringing the fruit. And if they want to have scurvy, they can have scurvy. That's what I say.
Exactly. Seriously. So that's how I see it. You know, it's here for the taking. I am always open to the conversation. I mean, as I had with Heather Thompson after the fact, I mean, it got real ugly unnecessarily to me because I didn't even see that coming from a mile away. And then, you know, when she wanted to have a civil discourse about it, I made myself available to that.
Right, right. The, you know, the white fragility of it all, though.
But, you know, again, I'm a woman of a particular age, Amir. I'm not new to this. And for the sake of getting to that, that omni dream I have of our nation that really allows space, and really it comes from this, and you'll appreciate this. It comes from me believing in the notion of abundance. This is all spiritual work for me. I believe in the abundance of our nation. I believe in the abundance of my God, and I believe in the abundance of life. And when you believe in abundance, you are not threatened by notions of scarcity.
Wow.
Because that's what silos people to these tribal spaces of social hierarchy based on race or sexual orientation or gender or religion. It's this notion of there's not enough. There's not enough whatever. There's not enough men. There's not enough money. There's not enough TV slots. There's not enough whatever, right? There's not enough time slots on the day, bitch, whatever it is. But if you believe in the abundance of life, it will really gut check you from those instincts of oppression and limitation.
Absolutely. And let me just say, just to end it right here, is that whether or not people loved you on the show, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, even if you didn't say anything and agreed with all of these white women, you'd still get crucified. That's the thing that people don't get.
That would have been a whole nother indictment. There's, yeah.
Exactly. That's a whole different indictment.
Yeah. I would have had a whole different, you know, community of really upset black women who would have felt, and I will say that, you know, despite, you know, whatever y'all see online, just know this. In my lived experience, when I walked through the streets of New York, Harlem in particular, where was I was in Dallas recently. I told you I was in London. I was in Maine recently.
Oh, my God. You're like Carmen Sandiego, boo.
Right?
She's everywhere.
Women, and especially black women, walk up to me and they say, sister, thank you. On airplanes, everywhere. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Not because you were perfect. Thank you. Not because you duplicated everything I would have said and done. But thank you for, in general, being a really beautiful representation of black womanhood.
Wow.
And that's all that if I don't get anything else, Amir, that soothes my soul.
Wow. That it's so funny how similar we have, because when people message me and they say, I found you and I came out to my parents, or I didn't commit suicide, that's enough for me. People think I want to drive a Maserati. Honey, I grew up with money. Money's not going to do, I want influence. I want, when I speak, that people listen, and I feel like you have that effect, and you can't buy that.
Well, you actually want more than influence. I mean, what you want is impact. You are seeking and thriving on the ability to impact. Ability to positively impact young people of identity that you know through your lived experience are not always seen.
Exactly.
And you see them and you represent the beauty of what happens when you are seen. And through your insistence on living your truth and freedom in the way that you do, they actually are being seen.
Wow. Before you make me cry, I'm going to cry. I cry so easily. Everyone that listens to this podcast knows I cry all the time. Yeah. It's good to cry. But, you know, I barely survived really a hair. I barely survived myself with all of the pressure in my life. And so I think that for me, if I had one person who looked like me, and if I can just be that for one other person, I've done enough. Aside from the parties and the friends and the verifications and the money, all I'm really looking for is to impact one person. And I've already accomplished that. So I live truthfully in that. So
yeah, we're playing with house money. That's what I call it. Yes. We're just playing with house money now.
Yes, absolutely. You're wonderful. When you say my name, it made my year, you know, like I just to hear Ebony K. Williams say Amir, I mean, that is really the cherry on the top for me. So thank you so much for being here.
My dear. So,
oh my God, you're
absolutely have a fabulous weekend, and thank you so much for chatting. This was great.
Of course. Absolutely. Everyone go follow Ebony K. Williams on Instagram if you're not already doing that. And Ebony, one last thing, is there anything that you're upcoming or anything you want to plug?
I am a little different. Mirror, I move a little different. Okay. I don't talk about it till it's time to show it. So there are some extremely exciting though for like people that are bought into the work that I do and you know the stuff, the energy I bring. I got some really good shit coming for you before the holidays. So stay tuned. stay tuned.
I'm so excited. And even your sign off is very just love it. It's the best. Thank you everyone for being here. This was a very fruitful conversation. And like I said, I will be on Dr. Phil next month. And I also am going after TikTok for their homophobic behavior. I'm meeting with a lawyer and really coming for them. So keep in touch and send me what you have. And you know, we like to take down giants, honey. If they treat me wrong, if you're not paying my rent or we're not dating, I'm not scared of you. And that goes for TikTok. Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you again, Ebony. You're wonderful.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, everyone.
This was fabulous.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Take On. The Take On is produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals, edited by Kyle Moore, and is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about me and The Take On at bpn.fm/The Take On. And of course, on my Instagram at Amir Yass Official. Yes, honey, we're official. Make sure to subscribe and rate The Take On wherever you stream your podcast and keep tuning in for more amazing guests.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.